David Hensel is the founder of Love Not Fear, and I'm looking right in front of me now. He's wearing a square white pin with a red love heart that says Love Not Fear. And so I'm really excited to learn about the story of Love Not Fear and learn about David's experience with building organizations.
Beautiful.
So welcome.
Thank you for having me on the pod. Let me tell you the story how I found out about Love Not Fear, or how this came into my life. I've always been an entrepreneur and never had a job, but I'm a recovering introvert. I used to be very introverted to the point that if you would have asked me years ago to speak in front of 1,000 people or shoot yourself in the face, I would have considered the gun. And I was so introverted, I had a hard time running a meeting with my own team, or being on a call with a customer was like terrifying. And a good friend of mine, he was keynote speaking and networking like a crazy person. And I saw how good this was for his business and how much fun he had doing this. And I was like, I want this. But how do you do this being an introverted nerd? So I did Toastmasters twice a week. For those of you who don't know, it's public speaking classes. And this helped. And I also went to 2 networking events per week. And I talked to everybody and their mother that was there, even though it was like really painful. It's like, okay, next person. And it helped, but the real transformation happened when my yoga teacher told me that every decision in life you either make out of love or out of fear. It was like this big light bulb moment in my head, because I realized that, for example, if I'm public speaking, if I'm full of fear and I'm thinking, do they think what I'm saying is stupid? Do they think I look weird? Do they think I have a weird German accent? Then I can't present, because it's about me and I'm full of fear. But if I turn this around and I think like what I'm sharing here can help people in their life or in their business, it becomes all of a sudden very easy to do that. Same with selling. I hated sales with a passion. I always sold out of fear. We are a startup. We have to sell or we die. And I've always felt like a used car salesman. But once I understood that if I can sell out of love, if I know this product is really good for you, then I can say, please do yourself the favor. Buy it. It's going to help you so much. And you feel that I'm doing this with love, that I want you to succeed and not because I want to hit my numbers or I want to buy a new Porsche or whatever. And this, I can't give you 20 more examples. Actually, let me give you one because it's org dev. I asked at my last company in America, which was MaxCDN, we grew very fast. And I asked my assistant to go to each department head and figure out, because one department did not know what the other one was doing. It was like utter chaos on the fast growing company. And I asked her to go to each team lead and ask them, what did they do last week? What they plan on doing this week? And kind of compile a newsletter and send it out to everybody. And every time she gave me the draft, it was really not good. And so I asked her like, hey, please sit down. I think you're doing this task out of fear, not love. And she looked at me like, WTF, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. And I explained, if you do this with love, you'd go to each department head, really figure out what they did and what they have to say. And you'd compile it in a newsletter that people really looking forward to getting good information, make it funny, make it entertaining. And you also do your best to understand what our CTO had to say because she was not super technical. Then you would do it with love. But you're doing this task only because David said this thing has to go out at Mondays at 4 p.m. And this really clicked with her and never had to correct anything. At some point we had a video newsletter where she was interviewing people and cutting it in a very cool way. So this is like how I realized how powerful it is to act out of love, not fear. And I do my best to do this in my personal life. And in companies, I have a portfolio of companies right now and with a little over 500 employees. Mm-hmm. And the idea that I always had is to create a company culture where people do their job out of love and not out of fear. And this has been working phenomenally well for us. And I could get, I'm talking too much. I could get into details, but
really cool.
Yeah.
Maybe just quickly, before we dive in, tell us a little bit about the companies that are in the portfolio at the moment. What industries are they in? What do the companies do?
So we have a marketing agency called Shortlist. We're like an agency for agencies. They white label us and then they market up mainly in the SEO space. We have UpCoach, which is a software for coaches to run their coaching business better. We have LTV Plus, which is a business process outsourcing business. And we have TaskDrive, where we give people virtual assistants. We have AI Operators, the latest one we launched. It's a coaching company. It helps companies to make everybody on the team use AI properly. And a few more. And then Love Not Fear, which is the umbrella where all those fall under. And this is my coaching and training company.
I love what you said earlier about love, not fear. It's about the mindset or the almost a cultural change. And if two people are working, one out of love and one out of fear, even if they're doing the same job and have the same set of instructions, it's not only that they perform differently and produce different outcomes, but also that the person who's working out of love comes home feeling very different at the end of the day. And we know that so much of work is connected to someone's purpose and how they create meaning in life. And I think Love Not Fear really gets to the heart of that.
Yeah, think about the shittiest job you had. You maybe gave 20% not to get fired. Like the quiet quitting that's happening, like 6 out of 10 employees are quiet quitting because they do things that are not meaningful to them with like people that they don't like. And I think if you do something that you, let's get back to the job where, that you don't like, maybe you give 20% not to get fired. And now if you create this culture where people are excited about doing the work that they're doing, it's meaningful, that they see the impact that they're having, they work with people that they like, then they give 80%, sometimes 100%. And if you have a team like this, you'll win over the competition because it's just changes the game.
We're also at an org design conference, and we often ask for the people listening in, how did you end up in org design? You have a very technical background. What was your journey into entrepreneurship? And would you call yourself an org designer now? Or are you coming for your own development to an org design conference? Tell me about how you think about that journey for you and why you gravitate towards org design.
I went to 14 different schools. I got kicked out everywhere, and I was not really made for the normal world, I guess. And a friend of mine said, hey, you go with computers. How about we start a business together? And I found entrepreneurship. This was like really like, because people don't tell me what I have to do. And
the angels
like,
singing.
Yes, yeah. The angels singing. Because you know, like school was always based on fear. You know, you have to do this or yes. You don't pass or et cetera, et cetera. So it just like didn't vibe with me. And I was always a personal development geek. Mm-hmm. And just always wanting to improve and tweak things and thinking in systems. I have a condition called aphantasia. Do you know what aphantasia is?
No, tell us more.
I cannot create images in my head. And I also cannot reproduce, so I can't reproduce images, but I also can't reproduce sounds, tastes, smells, or emotions. So I can have them in the moment, but I cannot recreate it. And hand in hand with this goes SDAM, which stands for Severely Deficient Autobiographical Memory. I have a very low-res memory because memories are pictures, sounds, tastes, smells, and emotions. So everything in my head is like more logical concepts. So it like always comes very naturally to me to build systems. And I found EOS like, I don't know, 10 years ago or so. And I was like, oh my God, all these things that I figured out over the years are like battle-tested, proven. And you know, I wish I would have had this earlier in my career.
So some of our listeners might not have heard of EOS before. Could you tell us what it means and what it does?
EOS stands for the Entrepreneurial Operating System. It helps you to define your mission vision, to how to run proper meetings, how to set proper goals, how to see if the GWC gets it once, has the capability, or if people are aligned with your core values. It's like an operating system to make your life as a business owner much easier. And I really like it. But I felt a few things are missing in terms of it feels too much like command and control. And I think we evolved it, we tweaked it.
That's really interesting that command and control sounds a little bit different to love, not fear.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Tell us about how things have changed from between there.
Let me give an example. At UpCoach, for example, at my company, before we had like very strict roles, for example, the head of product. You have a software company as well, so you can probably relate. So before, the head of product picked what are we going to build, then the designer designed, and then we tell, hey, developer A, you built this, developer B, this, developer C, you built this. Then they go into the dark rooms, program something, then they come back, and then marketing announces it to the customer, and then customer support deals with the issue. So it's like silo. And so we thought we want to change this. We want to really empower people and that they do meaningful work and they see the impact that they have with the work that they're doing. So we asked everybody. And they didn't like it, but we asked them anyway to do customer support. Like everybody in the company does customer support because we really want them to understand what are the issues that are people having. And we want them to really understand how our software works. And you can only, if you do customer support, you have to know how it works. And then our head of product did not do deep spec on the what should be built. We created a pool of ideas as just lots of different features that can be built. And the developers can pick whatever they want to build, right? Another thing we did is before developers gave estimations. Okay, for this feature, I'll need like X days to do that. But we gave them now budgets. We say this is a small, medium, or large issue, and a small issue has that much time, medium this much, and then it forces them to make faster decisions. But because they know the product, they can make decisions without talking to lots of people. And we also want to really empower them that they're not just a small wheel in the machine, but they actually have decision power. And then I think this is what the real kicker is. We ask them to announce when they ship something, not marketing ships it, they announce it in a user community because then they get the praise for, hey, I just built this and it's good, it's amazing. But they also get the direct feedback, oh, why did you do it like this and why doesn't it do that? And this really changed everything. We had a 300% increase in output from a dev team.
Wow.
300. Like, you can show it in a forum, like, people are like, what happened? How many people did you hire? How can you ship so much? This is like Christmas. It was really absolute game changing.
It's interesting what you said there, because it's not just software companies, but so many people that we talk to say that there's division in between different teams. There's us versus them. That mm-hmm. once an organization gets a big enough size, you're trying to not worry about the customer, but instead to be worried about other teams in your organization. And how are you trying to constantly navigate that and the fighting in between departments? And what you talked about there is bringing love to that instead of that team yes. rivalry, which is almost fear-based. I think that's a really fascinating way to tie in an organizational design problem that everyone seems to struggle with in a way that approaching it through love can really transform the outcomes that you get.
Also with connecting people properly, like taking off the mask and be like real humans. We do either the 3-to-1 exercise or the lifeline exercise. The lifeline exercise is you share the highs and lows that you had in your life, like very vulnerable with the team, because then it's not Mike from marketing and Stephanie from accounting. It's Mike who also went through depression. It's Stephanie who also lost her father when she was young.
How would you do that? Is that in a workshop, in a group session?
We build in UpCoach software, we have the module that you can drag in and you can put the points that you had. And then, yeah, it's facilitated. We do 20-minute, if we do it with leadership teams, we do 20-minute presentation per person about their life. And then we do 20 minutes shared experiences, like, oh, I had a drug phase as well, or I lost my father when I was young as well. And this is pure magic, what happens. Grown men cry like little kids, and it's like it's such a deep connection. And once you have this connection, you build this deep trust inside of an organization. We say ATM, alignment, trust, and motivation. I think this defines what good culture is, because then you're not afraid, you know, it's easy for me to criticize you because we know each other on a human level, you know, because we're taking off the mask. I think it's the key ingredients if you want to have a successful all-star team, that sports element, alignment. We're aligned that we want to win this together. We want to play this game. We agree that this is the game that we want to play. And I know that I know you on a deep level. I know that when I pass the ball to you, that you're going to not drop it, etc. And motivation, I'm a big believer to do profit sharing with people. So like we are like really aligned, like also have the same motivation. Whereas like, oh, we're on a team together. You get a trophy, you don't get a trophy. Or the story of the entrepreneur that buys a new car, and one employee sees it and he's like, hey, you want to check out my car? And it's, oh yeah, so cool. And he goes, if you work really hard, maybe in 2 or 3 years, I can buy another one. I'm a big fan of sharing.
So almost like that's the core ingredient to build a healthy organization is you need alignment first. You need trust first, and you need that motivation as the foundation to build a great organization.
I think actually alignment and trust, once this is established, the motivation will automatically fall into place.
Coming back to org design, so who reports to who, where work is done in the company, how do you approach thinking about that in the different companies that you've started and run?
It's very different because they're very different companies. I have different business partners or general managers, so it's not like one straight structure. I think who reports to whom, I think it's mainly people being responsible for certain areas. Also, we like to create intrapreneurs, people like really own their position and own their life. We also have a program, it's called Managing Happiness. It's how to run your life like a successful business, to define your mission, vision, and values, and goals and habits in the most important areas of your life, like you yourself, mind, body, spirit, eating right, exercising, all the things that you want to do to be on your A game there. Then your relationships, like what's your mission and vision for your community and family? How do you want to show up there? And then also you as the professional, what's the mission and vision there and what you want to accomplish? And then creating 90-day plans, etc., doing peer groups where you hold each other accountable to do those things. That's the thing, to really create people that own what they do and own the position that they hold.
Rewinding a couple of minutes, you mentioned two exercises. One was about the lifelines, about the high and the low points. And you mentioned another exercise, the 3-2-1.
Yes, 3-2-1 tell us about that. Quicker exercise. It's similar to the lifeline. It's also about taking off the mask and being vulnerable. We ask people to share 3 events that massively impacted their life, 2 people that massively impacted their life, and 1 decision that they've made that massively impacted your life. It's like the mini version of the lifeline. We really get to know somebody that works with you. We just launched Love Not Fear in Greece with a partner company who's a franchisee, if you want to call it that. and we did some 3-2-1, and I facilitated one of the groups we always do breakout, and it was really fascinating how deep people went and like how the energy in the room changed like after people shared that. And it's a quick exercise. Everybody just like 5 minute preparation, then everybody shares for 3 to 5 minutes. And it's really magic actually.
And that's a way to build alignment, trust, and motivation.
It's the trust piece. Like taking off the mask and seeing you for the human being and not like for the role or for the title or for the... It's like it breaks down these barriers.
When we talked about the analogy earlier of the lobster has to grow, but it grows bigger than its shell. And so it has to shed its shell to be able to grow larger. And so that requires a time of vulnerability to be able to grow through that.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's key ingredients to have a better life. Just be vulnerable, be yourself. Also in the hiring process, we like to record a video of the hiring manager who goes over the job post to explain what is expected, but also that the person who interviews sees the person that they're going to work with. And then they can either they drag them in, oh, he or she looks cool, I can see myself working with her, or like, oh no, not with that dude. So first, either drag in or push back. Or at MaxCDN, we had a core value, which was build cool shit.
Yes.
Was our number one core value because we want to attract engineering nerds who want to build cool shit. We want to repel people who want to come to work with a suit and tie on who would be offended that the company used the word shit in their core values. And I think it's really powerful because same like in life, like when I'm on a flight or meet anybody, I meet somebody, I just go deep. I don't talk about the weather. I talk about the real me. And either the person goes like, that dude's freaking crazy. I want nothing to do with him, which is totally fine because then he's not the right person for my life anyway. But if... Otherwise, people reciprocate and it like really drags them in.
It's been really good to talk with you about your approach. And for the leaders that are listening, which is most, where our audience is predominantly like everyday leaders with org design problems. And it's a really different tack to think about love, not fear, and the way that they approach both the culture of their organization, how they go about their work, the mission and the structure. So it's really, really interesting, really cool. Thank you for coming along to the Org Design Podcast. Damien, thanks for joining and co-hosting again today.
And one last question, just before wrapping up. If people want to learn more about the things you've talked about today, what's the best way for them to be in contact or find out more?
You can always contact me on LinkedIn. Just to mention, I get lots of requests that are irrelevant, like people want to sell me something. But if you tell me that you heard me on the Org Design Podcast, or if you want to nerd out about Org Dev, I'm all yours.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me.